Hi, everyone. This is Brooke James. Welcome to The Grief Coach. If it is your first time listening, I'm so glad you're here. And if you've listened before, welcome back. Today, we have back with us because we couldn't stop and we didn't get everything done the first time we talked, Shay Whitgate. Shay is a licensed clinical social worker in Nashville, Tennessee, and her work centers around supporting therapy clients through grief and loss, depression, anxiety, parenting, and family concerns. Shay, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
Yes, you're very easy to talk to, and I think this is going to be really good. For those of you who have listened to Shay's episode released before this one, you've heard her story a little bit, and I encourage you to go back and listen to that. But what we're going to focus on today is the hard emotions that come with grief, so specifically anger and jealousy. And Shay's going to give us a little bit of background from her training as a therapist, but we're going to talk about the concept of grief being a grief monster, which I'm very guilty of doing on a semi-regular basis, actually. So Shay, let's get right into it because I think this is something a lot of people can relate to.
Yeah, definitely. So we think about these big emotions like with grief, you think about something like fear, that is the expression of, I might be hurt, I don't want to be hurt. So that's the fear response. When you think about anger, that response is, I have been hurt. I am hurt. So in grief, anger, I am hurt, I have been hurt, I'm hurting is, you know, a really common response. So I do want to make that clear that it is a natural common response, but it is different. The anger and grief, I feel it's different. It's more of like a slow boiling anger that's just beneath the surface that can come out in like surprising, unexpected, uncomfortable, unwelcome ways.
Yeah.
So I do want to talk about how the expression of anger and the differences between I'm angry because you hit my car or something, like you damaged my property, and then I'm angry because I'm hurt. And it's this like slow boiling anger that doesn't go away easily.
Yeah. And I think with anger, you, when we talked before, talked about the concept of the, is it the anger iceberg? What is
that? Yeah, the anger iceberg. And I can share more about that if you want me to go into that.
Yeah, I think that would be good because I think what happens, at least for me, and I think for a lot of people listening, is anger is the easiest emotion, right? Because it is much harder to not only identify, but then vocalize some of these deep-seated fears and insecurities and like sadness and despair. Anger is a much easier emotion to go to. And so since getting into this a little bit more, when I get really angry, I like will try to be like, well, what's underneath that? Because I'm just like trying to like help myself and those who have to deal with me. If you can share a little bit more about that and how, any tips for like helping people identify it when they're experiencing that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. So I do think that one thing that grievers might like a type of anger that we could talk about too in that anger iceberg is like competitive anger, like a competitive grief. I think that's really common. And this is a type of anger that we might see angry on the surface, but underneath there's that competitive aspect, that jealousy, that like, I am hurting worse than you. My hurt is more important than your hurt. So that gives me a right to act however I want because I'm experiencing this. And so that's something that I personally dealt with a lot. And I see in my practice too, this competitive side of anger and grief. And, you know, you were talking about the iceberg. If you think about an iceberg in an ocean, you see the tip of it and that's the part you look out for, but underneath is a lot bigger. And like the Titanic, it rips you up before you even get to the anger sometimes.
Yeah.
So like connecting with that bigger portion of your emotions is really important in working through this grieving process and your anger.
And can we talk about, to flip it and maybe not related to anger, but the concept of competitive grief, I want to just take a pause and talk about, because when I was sketching out the podcast, I talked to one of my good friends, and he had shared someone in his family had died, not in his direct nuclear family, but he was like very devastated. But he's like, but it wasn't my brother, right? And it's a cousin of his. So any advice for people who like on the other side of that competitive anger, who like they feel like they don't have the right to be as sad? Because I think people deal with that a lot in loss.
I think so. And I think sometimes when we get competitive, we want other people to validate our hurt, to make it important, to make it valid, you know, but you don't need anyone to acknowledge your hurt or your loss or your grief or your relationship with that person to make it valid. In fact, being competitive isolates you more and adds to your anger, rather like maybe you're going into it thinking, well, like this is important to me too, or I'm upset too. But if you could find common ground with people, that's more helpful. And I think, you know, Cecily Strong from SNL, yeah. I haven't read her book, but she wrote a book about grief and her cousin had died, I think it was. And so like the experience of that not being as valid in grief, because griefers are competitive, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. And do you think that stems from people wanting to feel like acknowledged and seen?
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think so. I think it comes from the desire to like tell your story and share your story and to get validation. And yeah, like you said, to be acknowledged and be seen. But really what it does is it pushes you away from people and isolates you further. Mm-hmm. And so we might think, if I can be like this upset, or I can like justify my actions this way, but then no one wants to be around you when you're being competitive, or you're being like really like the grief monster.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like, easier said than done, always, always. When I've seen this in my own life, it's like, okay, maybe you don't feel like, I had a cousin pass away this summer and I loved her dearly, but she's not my sister. And like her sister is one, like, the people I'm closest to in my whole life. And it's like, it's different. You can still love the person who passed and you can still be devastated. You can acknowledge it's different, but can you focus on, this is what we miss about this person. This is like, wasn't it funny when they used to do blah, 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 or I bet you they would have said blah, blah, blah. Like to be, how do you find that togetherness and honoring of the person who's passed? If we can get there instead of getting competitive, because sometimes like I really enjoy with my dad and honoring his memory of like when people tell me stories I haven't heard or anecdotes that I've forgotten about. Right. And so yeah. If we can start to think about as grievers and as a bereaved community going there versus the like, well, I miss them more, or like, am I allowed to miss them this much? I think that's a much healthier place to be, but not our first instinct.
Right. Yeah. And I think like you were saying, like finding the common ground and sharing memories, sharing stories, like you're keeping that person alive. You're connecting with other people or grieving that person. And if you can understand your own loss, then in your own grief, that helps you make those connections. Sometimes I think, like you said earlier, anger is the easiest emotion to go to. So if you have that anger, maybe examine like, am I really understanding my grief? And then if you feel like a person who's not allowed to grieve as much or be as sad, understand those feelings too and understand your grief. And you can validate it yourself. You don't need to have other people validate it for you. And then try to find common ground with the grievers, like with your cousin about her sister, rather than you feeling like you can't be as sad because like you have a different relationship with her. Like your relationship with her mattered. And no one needs to validate that. And in competitive grief, we're searching for a validation, which we don't even need. Like, I don't know why we do that, but we do sometimes.
I was hoping you would know why. They didn't teach you that in therapy school.
I think the reason we probably do it is we just want our feelings to go somewhere. We want that energy to go somewhere. We want it to be validated by other people. We want to like have permission to be upset, to say that it matters, but we don't need other people's permission to to feel the way we feel. Like, we don't really do that with other emotions. I don't need someone's permission to be excited about something. Why do I need someone's permission to miss someone who's died?
Mm-hmm. Why do we do that? That's like,
Grief is so strange. It takes us outside of all these things that we understand and know, and all the control that we feel like we have in life. Mm-hmm. It rips us away from that. So we're trying to use tools that we use in regular life in grief, but it's like two different things. So like, you have to learn new tools, and understanding your grief is the first part of learning that tool. Like, understanding your anger, like, how do I know that I'm angry and it's about something else? Well, first of all, how do I understand my anger? Am I a person who's angry and screaming? Am I a person who's angry and shutting down? The more you can understand that, the better you'll be able to understand what's under that. So I can give an example of, yeah, you know, some of this. So my dad's first 1 year anniversary was coming up, a year since he had died. And we were going to go, I think it was like the day before, we were going to go to this like gardens. My dad was a landscape architect, and go look at this garden and walk around together. And my mom couldn't go because she was really sick with her cancer. This was a month before, well, like a couple of weeks before she died, actually. And so she was like not able to walk and like really sick and nauseous. And so I was upset about that. I was upset that we weren't memorializing him and remembering him and like going on a walk together. But I didn't, of course, know that. And then my partner and I went to go do something, and I got mad, and I come back to my mom's house, and we're like, I'm screaming at him. And I was trying to think today, like, what was I mad about? I don't even remember. I think it has something to do with like Starbucks. Like, I wanted to go to Starbucks and he didn't want to go to Starbucks, but he should have known that I wanted to go to Starbucks when I said, let's go, like, what do you think about Starbucks? And so we're like, I'm like screaming at him. I'm super mad. And it didn't make any sense. And it's silly now. And I don't even remember the fight or like what it was about. But if I step back from it, I was really scared that my mom was so sick that she couldn't go on a walk to a garden. And I was scared about how I would feel that day. Like, what are those emotions? I've never done a 1 year anniversary. Like, I'm terrified. And I'm also like, is it going to be this bad forever? So my feelings of fear were just so big, but I couldn't say I'm scared that mom's dying and that I'm always going to be really sad and that dad's death is going to overwhelm me. Yeah. So I was like, just mad about Starbucks.
Yeah. And I think like, that's such a good thing to remember, right? Because anxiety about upcoming memorial dates, so whether it or like birthday or anniversary or a holiday you always used to spend with this person, like so normal for that grief to manifest as anger, as fear, as for me, it manifests often as anxiety. And like, I have several friends who've lost parents, and we talk about that the lead up is worse than the day. Yeah, totally. Because you're scared, like, mm-hmm. and that, like, and sad. And it's much easier to be anxious of like, how am I going to feel? How am I going to feel on the day? And it's like, well, I can be sad 3 weeks before. Right. Yeah. But I also like, I know for me, like middle to end of December is super hard for me because it's my dad's birthday. We always did Christmas at his house. We always did New Year's at his house. And so I know I'm like emotional and nothing that I have done since he's died has been as good. Right. Yeah. And I'm mad he's not there. I'm mad I can't do it. Like all the stuff. And so I said to my boyfriend, I was like, I just need you to know the next 2 weeks are hard for me. And so if I'm a little like, that's probably why. And like, let's talk about it. But like, I'm going to warn you because I know this is hard for me. But like, also like, how helpful is that for him? Like, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But like, not everyone can do that because being able to identify is hard also.
Yeah, I think too, like I said earlier, grief is so outside of the normal realms of life, the things that we talk about, the things that we, you know, share more openly. Grief is more like a, almost like a secret taboo thing. So like you don't really know how you're going to deal with those things until they're happening. Like no one told me the day before the anniversaries or the birthdays the hardest. I found out the hard way. The days of the anniversary of the birthdays, those were always fine because everyone's texting me and I like plans to like eat cake and like go outside and do nice things. But the days before were really hard. And now I know that, you know, but I no one prepared me for that. And I just don't think people like to talk about that kind of stuff. But so I think it's important to give yourself grace during that time. And if it takes a couple of years to realize that the end of December is hard for you, then that's okay. Because sometimes we're like, well, why was the day before hard? You might really chalk it up to the Starbucks incident and not really have the understanding because you're still so in grief that it's kind of a fog is taking over you.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking about this a little bit before we started recording of how it changes over time and being like nervous for it to change over time and mad it's that your grief is changing. And I don't know any just thoughts on that, because I think that's something that is hard for me to wrap my brain around personally.
Yeah. And I think that was one of the deeper feelings for me on the anniversary before my anniversary, of my dad's death. I was like, is it always going to be like this? Like, it's been people say like, oh, it's bad for a year, but then people say it's bad for 2 years, or I was like a mess for 7 years. And that anxiety really does build. It's like, well, how long am I going to feel this bad? But when you do lose someone, you continue to grieve them the rest of your life.
Right.
And I think, you know, I want to be like gentle about how I say this, but I don't think it's going to necessarily go away. Like maybe you understand it more, but like when my partner bought our house, I was really upset about that because it was this big change that my family couldn't be a part of. And I think I talked about this before, and celebrating other people's birthdays, like families and stuff like that, like those things still hurt. And I'm still grieving them. And sometimes it surprises me when I grieve them. But like, I got a late fee notice on like my health insurance because I work for myself. So I like pay for it. And I remember just coming home like crying. And I think it was like right before the holidays started. It was like early December. And then I was like, oh, like maybe I'm like upset about the holidays. But it was so surprising to be upset about a late fee for health insurance. But you know, when you lose
they're annoying because it's already really expensive to self-insure. So the audacity of them to charge a late fee.
I know, rude. Like call me. I remember being like, why didn't they call me? Just got this like sassy letter in the mail. And anyway, but you know, you're gonna grieve different times. Like when you if you lose like for me, like when I have my own family one day, I'm sure there'll be moments of grief because
of course
the people that I want to know, my family won't be there.
Yeah. I remember having that conversation with my dad like many years ago, but then, and I've talked about this on the show. I think I said this to you yesterday when we were recording. I like black out and have no idea what I say. So sorry for people who've heard me talk about this before. My dad was older, right? And I was like, I need to find someone to marry and have kids with. So you know my kids. And he was like, please don't rush that for me. And I was really, really upset. And he was like, they'll know me through you, right? And yes, that is true, but that's not the same thing at all. So how do we find comfort in, yes, like these people we love so much had such an influence on us. So they influence how we act, how we move through the world, how we show up, but it's so not the same thing.
Yeah. It's definitely not. And like, that's a really sweet thing that he said. And I believe that that's true, that, you know, they will know him because they know you. And I think I might have shared this with you before, but my brother, when my dad died, he said, we are dad, like we're his DNA. And so like the idea that you, the life of the dead live on through the living, like we carry them with us at the same time. Like, yeah, that doesn't make it any easier when it's Christmas or Father's Day or Mother's Day or whatever big celebration or milestone in your life. doesn't make it any easier that, you know, I have their DNA, like, great, right. You know, but like being gentle with yourself during those times, like, of course you can still grieve 5 years later and have surprises of grief on hard days. Anger, jealousy, you know, these are emotions that go along with grief. They're expressions, easier expressions. I'm quoting easier expressions of our love for that person.
Oh, and the jealousy piece we started to talk about when we recorded last time. And again, you go listen to that episode first if you haven't listened to that one yet. But the jealousy piece, you said yesterday, and I agreed with you, I think that like that was a really big shock to me. Now when I go to a wedding, I have to leave during the father-daughter dance and I go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Like I can't watch it because I get so angry. I'm not going to have that. Mm-hmm. And like we were talking about like Father's Day, Mother's Day, I get mad at all these people who get new memories. I'm not going to have that. And it's so much easier to be mad and then jealous than devastated.
Mm-hmm. So much easier. Yeah. Because I feel like we think we can control those emotions more. Mm-hmm. I can control an anger emotion more than the sadness, because that's going to pull me down. That depression, that misery is going to, you know, engulf me and it's going to be so horrible and I won't be able to get back up. But I can control anger. But like anger for me and jealousy have been just as damaging. I'm still picking up pieces of some of the things that I did and said and thought that were justified, which they totally weren't, because I was hurt. I was so much more hurt than anyone else around me. So I could act however I wanted. I'm still picking up those pieces. And wouldn't it have been just easier to befriend my sadness a little bit and make room for my grief? I don't know. I wasn't able to, but now I,
well, it's now hard, I make room for right?
it. Yeah.
It's really hard because I don't know if you found this and you talked about this when we talked before, that the concept of how do you befriend your grief, but if you befriend it, it's almost like, okay, yeah, this person's really gone. I have to learn how to live with this because this is real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's scary.
You think that's why it's so hard?
I think so. I think it's scary. I don't know if many people who are really talking about befriending your grief. So like, maybe it's just not something people are aware of. Maybe people don't know how to do that. And then also there's an acknowledgement that this physical expression of their life is over. Mm-hmm. And that's really scary. I think for myself personally, that the grief was just going to be so horrible. It was just going to be way worse. I'd rather be like blowing up my life in anger fits than experiencing the grief, because I knew it was going to be way worse. Mm-hmm. Wasn't the case. It would have been easier in the long run to just deal with my grief. But I mean, anger is a part of it, and it's okay to feel angry. You will feel angry. I think Aristotle said, it's really easy to be angry, but it's really hard to be angry at the right time for the right reason in the right way with the right person. Like some people just can't do that. And I'm like,
that sounds hard. Yeah.
I thought I could control like my anger, or I was in charge in this point, but like really I had no idea what it was about. And I think the more I understood my anger, the more I was like, this is so misplaced. This is not right. I'm not even expressing my anger and moving through it in a way that makes sense. I'm just like lashing out.
What suggestions do you have, either from personal experience or from your training? And like, I'm in therapy. I am obsessed. I'm one of those annoying New Yorkers who's like, well, my therapist says, but it's really hard. So like, what suggestions do you have to kind of get below that anger and learn how to deal, or what worked for you, or what do you suggest to clients? Because if we can give some like practical tips, even if it helps just one person, I feel like that'd be great.
Yeah. Well, so if anger is like, if there's this like grief iceberg and anger is at the tip and there's all these other complex emotions underneath it, you have to like go down there and explore them and uncover them and know what they are, or you're just going to stay up at the top and just experience the anger. But like understand for yourself, how do I express anger? Because that's going to look different. And if you understand how you express anger, when you see it to start coming out in your actions, you can know, okay, well, this is like a signal, a flag that I need to go down and experience what's really bothering me. And then give it something to do. It's just an energy. It's not, we don't need to label it. It's not a good or bad thing. Yes, it's true that we mishandle anger and it ends up hurting others and ourselves, but like, it's just an energy. Let's give it something to do. And for some people that means competitive sports. I was not in a place to like, some people like say like, oh, I kickbox. Like I've heard that from grievers a lot. Like I was not in a place to kickbox, could barely walk. So like give it something to do can mean journal. It can mean move your body. It can mean watch a funny video to kind of like shake up the stale anger that's there. Like bring in a new emotion, because like laughter and anger aren't going to like coexist well. Mm-hmm. Some people think things like suppressing it or venting will be helpful, but I hope people like understand that those aren't helpful.
Can you share a little bit why venting may not be helpful? Because mm-hmm. I think there it's a really fine line between like identifying and maybe telling someone you're close to of like, wow, I was so upset because XYZ. And I think the reason I'm so upset is because the anniversary is coming up and I'm really scared. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm mm-hmm. sad. If it's an anniversary, it means it's been another year. Like it's another mm-hmm. birthday. They're not here. Like mm-hmm. it's another Father's Day. It's another Mother's Day. So how would you, because I think there's a lot of nuance between venting versus identifying.
Yeah, totally. So venting is just like stoking the fire, adding fuel to it, giving it more energy. It's like if you're sitting outside watching cars go by, and instead of just like sitting on your front porch watching the cars go by and be like, oh, that's anger. I'm experiencing it. Here it is. And then it goes by. Like when you're venting, you're like chasing after the car mm-hmm. instead of just like watching the emotions go by and experiencing them and let them come and let them go and not labeling them. You're chasing that car down the street when you're venting. You're adding to the anger. You're building it up. You're like getting better at, it's like you're practicing and rehearsing. You're getting like, you're working that muscle and getting better at like expressing it in a negative mm-hmm. way. That's just hurtful for you. I vented
great
a lot.
Analogies. Love thanks. That. Very, very applicable. I can visualize it.
Yeah. I vented a lot and it would just create so much negative space in my head and mm-hmm. the stories would just build and get bigger and more vivid and they almost become like more than real life. So if you can be more present with the real facts of like what went on, whether that's someone who said something that was unhelpful or something you weren't happy about during the funeral or whatever it is that you're venting about, like stick with all the real facts rather than the story that you have painted in your venting sessions or in your head.
Yeah. No, I think that is really a good thing. And I really like what you said about anger is just energy. And so like, how can you redirect it? Like for me, I go on a walk.
Yeah.
Like, or I do like stretching, or I will like do some Pilates, yoga, whatever, moving. That helps mm-hmm. me get it out mm-hmm. or just move it around. Like, but letting it just like sit and fester, for me, makes me much more likely to vent and like stay angry versus mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. moving it.
Yeah, you got to like shake it up or it kind of just becomes like this like stale emotion that's just like lingering around you and like it's just with you bubbling under the surface, like ready to just like come out. So can you move your body? Can you go do something you enjoy? Can you like watch, like some people, I try to keep things like, can you just lay in bed and watch funny videos on YouTube? Like I try to keep things reasonable because I remember not wanting to go to a yoga class when I was first grieving. I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
But could you like pop some cookies in the oven and like watch some funny videos? Just like get moving.
That's funny you say that because cooking, I feel like is really meditative, or baking of it's chopping, mm-hmm. it's mixing, it's tangible, mm-hmm. something in your hands. I had a woman named Amber on early, an episode like in the teens, I think. And we talked about, she's a nutritionist, and we talked about how do you nourish your body while you're going through something hard? Because I think, I'm sure you know a lot about this with your training of like how food, people either don't eat as much or they eat a lot more, and how your mm-hmm. habits just change And so we're talking about how do you nourish yourself when you're going through this hard thing? So you're better equipping your body just a little bit to feel a little bit less shitty, right? If you're nourishing food. But she talks about making, I think it was her mother-in-law, I might not remember, it was over a year ago, always made these cookies. And so when they were missing her, they would make the cookie recipe, her and her son, because it's a nice way to honor someone, but also like it's a task from beginning to end, which like some people like laundry because it's a task that has a beginning, middle, and end. I hate laundry and I hate folding. So that doesn't work for me. But cooking, it's like you're making something and it gets that energy out. So I think cooking is a really good one. And also something I find works for me when I'm really angry is screaming into a pillow. Very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, you're getting that energy out. So it's not just stored inside of you, but you're not screaming at someone.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
Not right away, but the like summer after, a couple months after, did a lot of breath work. Have you ever tried that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So for those of you who might need some like support going through this, there's a app called Grief Works, and Julia Samuel, who's like a grief psychotherapist and author, has this app, and she goes through different kinds of things like experiencing your pain and like a meditation and breathing exercise where you're like delving into the pain and you're making room for your grief and you're exploring your feelings. And there's one on anger, there's some on numbness, sadness. So like any kind of like meditative, like in a way cooking could be meditative, like you're focusing here on the present moment, whether that's through a breathing app or a breathing exercise, doing a recipe, doing a class, going for a walk, just being in the present moment. All of these things that you're doing are information. So if you're eating junk food, that's information to your body. If you're ruminating and you're venting and just replaying all of these things you were angry about, that's information to your body. On the other hand, you can give it some different kind of information, which could be moving your body, a healthier snack, productive, working through your feelings.
Drinking water. Also, drinking, I feel like people forget to do that.
Yes.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're, keep that in mind as you're working through your grief, that all the choices that you make are information to your brain and your body. And no shame if you, you know, have some information days that aren't as helpful, but you find out what works for you and keep your goals small and your horizons close. You don't want to plan for something like a week down the road. You don't know how you're going to be then. Like keep things close and really timelines short.
Love that expression. I've never heard that, of keep your horizons close. That's really wonderful advice. Yeah. I feel like for a lot of people, but especially grievers.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, like your emotions are changing, you're experiencing so much for the first time, maybe if you're grieving for the first time, or maybe you're not grieving for the first time and it's compounding your loss, which makes it more complicated. Like you don't know how you're going to be doing. So don't overwhelm yourself or you'll just end up canceling or just going and being miserable.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's so many good examples there of things that people can do. Do you have any, I don't know if you find this, it's not like journal, I don't journal, but I reflect often of like, okay, well, why, if I'm reacting in like a way that I'm like, this doesn't match what's going on in this situation at all. I'm like, okay, well, why, what's happening here? Why am I doing that? Why might I be feeling that way? Do you have any like questions like that people can ask themselves?
Yeah. Like, so questions people can ask if they're like noticing that things are off and they're not sure why. Yeah. Well, I think first of all, even being able to notice that things are off, I think takes a lot of awareness. So like being in the present moment, that awareness is pretty huge, you know? And I think one thing you could do if you're not really able to connect with that is talk to someone you trust about like, are there times where I seem different, or like, just, can you give me some feedback about like that situation that we went through? So that's something that I did. I had to learn how to trust others, because grief really messed up my perception of things. Like I would go and share about my grief and then not really get a great response. And then I would have the perception that it didn't go well. And I had to trust my partner that he was like, no, it was fine. It's just you being in your head about it. Mm-hmm. So I think if you have a trusted person that you can talk to, that would be good. Things you could just ask are like, okay, well, I'm going to sit with this and I'm going to sit here and say, what is the deeper feeling that I could be feeling? Maybe am I experiencing some sadness? Could I be experiencing some fear? Could I be experiencing some jealousy? Just giving yourself the time and space to ask what is deeper. And if you don't know, like, what is deeper, maybe you talk to a therapist or you seek out some support to help you get some perspective. Because I think perspective can be really hard during grief, or that was true for me.
Can you give some examples of that, or like where you've seen that show up in your practice?
Yeah, I think sometimes something I do in my practice a lot is I normalize things for people and I say, like, well, grief is exhausting, or like there's nothing that can be done. So those are the kinds of things that I'll say. Like, I'm like, you're operating like you're at full capacity, but you're grieving. So you're not, like, a lot of your energy and your mind and body are going to something else, but you're trying to continue, like, that's not happening. So, like, I'll offer that perspective to people. And that seems really, like, obvious to me now, but at the time of my own grief, that wasn't obvious, that my mind and my body were doing, my brain was processing, and your brain is a greedy organ. It takes a lot of energy. So it's working really hard. So keep that in mind. But yeah, I think for me, like, sometimes talking to someone else and, like, talking about, like, just what happened out loud gave me a little bit of understanding of myself. Like, I would hear myself say what had happened and what I was feeling, and it helped me uncover the truth. And then people who knew me well would say, you seem like upset about that, or could this be about something else? So an example of my personal life, when my dad died, my partner kept saying, you seem stressed. And I was like, I'm not stressed. Like, screaming that. But, like, for me, stress was like, I have a deadline. Like, it wasn't about, like, grief. So I didn't understand that, like, stress and grief could go together, which is funny now, because of course it's stressful when someone dies, but I just didn't associate that emotion. Like, I was doing all the same things. I was running around. I was anxious. I was freaking out. I was, like, being snappy and, like, sharp and harsh with people. And he was like, that kind of seems like you're in a stress state. Like, if you had a big deadline and you were really flustered.
Yeah. And I think also what happens similar to that is people who get consumed with to-do lists. Mm-hmm. Like,
it's a really popular thing.
I did that.
Yeah.
And, because you can control your list and you can control crossing things off the list.
Yeah.
And calling the bank, calling the lawyer, calling, like, the airline to shut down their frequent flyer miles and transfer those over, which, by the way, you can do that. Organizing, like, all the people who want to come say goodbye, and, like, organizing the funeral and all these things. And that feeling of control, which, like, my anxiety often goes in there. Like, for me, I really, really focused on, like, a to-do list. Yeah. And then when it was done and all the things were done, you're like, oh, like, all this is still here.
You're like, oh crap, now I have to deal with this. And yeah, grief is so interesting because we want to busy ourselves. We want to be doing something. We want to be fixing, solving problems. And the hard thing about grief is it's not a problem to be solved. Like, your feelings aren't a problem. You aren't a problem. The person has died. That's a part of everyone's life. Like, that's part of life. Like, it's going to happen. It's not a problem, but yet we categorize it as a problem, as this negative thing, and we want to fix it.
Can we talk about that? Because I think that's an important point for people to understand. And I said this to you when we recorded before, of people who are fresh grievers, they want advice on how to get through it, how to fix it, how to go back to normal, when really it's like, you have this new normal. You have this, like, new entity that you have to learn how to incorporate into your life and live with, because it doesn't go away. You end up in a place where it's not there as prevalent. You learn to live with it, but it never goes away. So, of, like, making space in your life for this new thing. But I think a lot of people think grief is a problem to solve, and any advice or thoughts there.
Yeah, right. Well, it's not a problem to solve. It's just a change in life. It's the end of someone's human experience. And just like a birth would be a change in life, right? Like you would have to make space for that new baby, for that new life. Things in your life would change and you would forever be different because of that experience. Like if you gave birth to your child or you adopted a child or whatever, like you would be different. You would no longer be a person without a child. And so like, but we don't see that as a problem. But in grief, like it, you are different. Like you will always be different. A person that you loved is no longer has this human experience, human expression, physical expression. Of course that changes you. Of course it's different. Don't let other people tell you that your grief is a problem, your feelings are a problem, you need to get better. Don't give that pressure to yourself. Grief takes longer than any of us like would care to admit or want to admit or want to give time to. It's a process of, like, I guess some people call it like a love story. You know, it's not going away. Mm-hmm. You can learn to make room for it and make space for it, incorporate it into your life, but it's not a problem that has to be solved. So being gentle with yourself and keep your horizon short and taking a step at a time and understanding it, getting to know it, you might be surprised about what you find.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we can end there. That's a nice place to end, unless do you have any other advice on people dealing with grief monsters, grief anger, anything like that?
Well, I do want to say it's sometimes when we get angry, the hardest anger is anger at ourselves. It's okay to be angry at like a god or the person who died or people around you who aren't supporting you, but like the anger at ourselves can be a really difficult one. So if that's happening to you, know that the love and forgiveness you give to others, you can also extend to yourself. And in fact, I think people should start there.
What a great reminder. And that's always the hardest one.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, if people want to find you online and hear more from you, where should they go?
My Instagram, Wingate Counseling, or my website, wingatecounseling.com.
Okay. And I'll put that in the show notes. Thank you for coming back. And I'm really glad we got to spend some time delving into this because it's very common and confusing. So I hope people found this a useful conversation. Thank you everyone for listening. You can find me online at thegriefcoach.co, on social at the_griefcoach. And if you write a nice review on Apple Podcasts, it helps other people looking for this type of content find it. Thanks so much.